Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hi folks, how you doing? Welcome along to Soundtracking with me, Edith Bowman. Thank you so much for your company and joining me for another eavesdrop-in on a conversation about film and music. In fact, I hope it's not an eavesdrop. I hope you very much feel like you are sat there involved in the conversation, because I never want it to feel like we are talking at you. I want it to feel like we are talking with you. So with that in mind, actually, we really love getting emails from you guys, whether that is about being very kind about the podcast. But what I really like is suggestions or questions or pointing me in the direction of areas that you feel we might have missed. So I always want this podcast to feel like you are part of it. So whether it's people that you want to hear on the podcast that you haven't heard yet, and yes, the weekly emails are still going into John Williams, and I follow that up. I know, because Disclosure Day obviously is out in cinemas, which is phenomenal. I tried for Spielberg. I wasn't lucky enough this time around, but that doesn't stop me from constantly going, you know, give me some time later down the line if the film is being considered for award stuff. But believe me, I tried, and I was as disappointed as you were when we didn't get time. But hey ho, onwards and upwards. It's not all about the big names. It's sometimes just about the conversations. But we'd love to hear from you as to who you would love to hear on the podcast. So drop me an email. It's that simple. You can either drop me an email, info@edithbowman.com, or if you want to get in touch on socials, we are at Soundtracking UK, and I do eventually get round to reading all the messages that come in. So thank you so much. Also, just to say that we have some competitions going up on our Instagram. So we just give away some really lovely merchandise for Tuner. I'm just about to post a bit of a kind of a goodie box of lots of different bits and bobs from different films. So if you want to be in with a chance of winning on that, head across to our socials. But bit of a last minute change of plan on this one. And this is another thing that I love about it. People reach out, and so we shift things about because we can and we want to have these conversations. Our latest guests on Soundtrack, and it's a welcome back to a regular contributor and friend of the show, Mr. Daniel Pemberton, who brings along none other than rock legend Brian May. I know, when I got the message, Daniel's like, would you have time for me and Brian? Yes, Daniel, I very much would. And they join me to discuss their really beautiful, I don't know, just it's so lovely because you can hear both their kind of childlike enthusiasm for what they do, and the collaboration between Daniel and Brian is just a match made in heaven for Masters of the Universe. We had intended, of course, to share my chat with Phineas O'Connell about his fantastic score for Beef 2, but we will bring you that very soon. It will drop this week at some point. Based on the classic cartoon, though, Masters of the Universe tells the story of Adam, He-Man, I have the power. I loved that cartoon as a kid. And She-Ra, Princess of Power. Anyway, I digress. Anyway, it tells the story of Adam, who returns to his homeland of Eternia to take his destiny as He-Man and take on his nemesis, Skeletor, who I have to say is just played by a wonderfully hammy Jared Leto in this film. He's having the time of his life. So Daniel and Brian work together on several cues, and so we'll begin with one of them before they tell us about how this collaboration came about and, yeah, what it resulted in. This is The Sword of Power. Brian.
Hello. Nice to meet you.
Lovely to meet you too. How are you today?
I'm all right. I had a busy day. I've been doing stuff with children. A lot of things happen, you know, where children have special problems, or if they have an incurable illness or something, various foundations that kind of grant them their wishes. So this little boy today, how old is he? 12, wanted to play guitar with me. So we did a little bit of playing in the studio, which is nice.
That's amazing. What a beautiful thing to do.
My attitude is you have to be completely normal. Everything has to be normal. And it gives them a nice feeling of sort of security, I think. And they get excited and stuff. So it was a nice day. And before that, I had children all day. I was at this little thing called Huckleberry's, which is near where I live, which is a school, sort of outdoor adventure school for kids who hate school. Like kids who've either been thrown out of school or else they've...
Yeah.
So much they can't go. So they're all ADHD and they're great. They're lovely kids. So I go in and play some guitar with them sometimes.
Hi, Brian.
Oh.
All right, genius.
This is a treat. This is such a treat. Daniel, I remember, thank you for this as well. Just saying thank you so much to Brian as well for taking the time to chat to me. You gave me a little sneaky peek into the musical world of this film, which I was so excited about when you gave me a little blast of it and were excited about what you were about to do, because I think you just started working on it as well. Really interested in terms of what were those initial conversations about what this world sonically was going to be? You know, were you given free rein? Were there any specific?
Yeah, I mean, I met with Travis and I didn't really want to do a sort of by the book blockbuster score. I don't find them particularly exciting. And I sort of said to him, I'm kind of only really interested in doing this movie if I can do it in the way, you know, something like what Brian and Queen did with Flash Gordon, which I always think is a really underrated, groundbreaking score of approaching a sci-fi world with both humor and fun, but also very theatrically and just with a load of style and attitude and just doing something different, you know. And what was great was Travis was like, well, I was thinking the same thing. And directors often say that at the beginning, just to like kind of fish you in. Yeah. And by the end, you're like, oh, well, I didn't manage to do anything like that. But on this, we did.
Brian, what do you remember about that conversation you had back for Flash Gordon in terms of what was asked of you, you know, in terms of similarly with Daniel with this?
Oh, well, it was very different, really. Flash Gordon was directed by Mike Hodges, who had just done Michael Caine in To Get Carter. Mm-hmm. He was quite a big name director, but the producer and the money behind it was Dino De Laurentiis, mega Italian producer who'd just done King Kong for billions of dollars or whatever. And it was a real clash even before we arrived on the scene. They obviously had completely different visions of what the film was. And it became very apparent, really, because Mike obviously had us in mind and he saw the whole film as being very retro, like Daniel said, you know, very tongue-in-cheek, very grand, but slightly humorous and slightly camp and all this sort of stuff, whereas Dino saw it as a very serious film. So
wow.
To cut a long story short, we saw some of the rushes and we went away and all of the band, like me, Roger, John, Freddie, we all went away and did little pieces that we thought might be appropriate for the film. And we had this moment when we finally played all our ideas to Dino and Mike Hodges. Dino sat there, big man. He sat there sort of nodding and nodding and nodding all the way through, going, And the final thing was we played my idea for Flash, et cetera, right? Yeah. At which time his face kind of went rather stony. And at the end of it, he said, yes, it's very good, but it's not for my film. And so I thought, oh, this is over. This is not. But Mike quietly whispered to me, he said, don't worry, I'll fix it. You'll be fine. And the reason was that he didn't see the humor in his own film. It's quite odd. He did later on. He got it in the end. But at that point, he didn't really think we were appropriate. He didn't think it was going to work, I don't think. And a lot of people in the business at that time said, you can't score a full movie using rock music. It can't be done. It's never been done. And I went, I think it can, you know. And so just about writing themes. It was writing whole bits of narrative. And I had this idea for the doom, 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 which would come and go and come and go and kind of weave all that piece of the story together. And when they heard it, they went, yeah, okay, it does work. It was a real kind of victory for us. And when the premiere came, we were all there, Dino's there, and he's finding everything. And he came up to me after the premiere and said, you did a wonderful job for me, thank you. So that was it was all smiles in the end.
I mean, for me, it's probably one of the films I've watched the most throughout my entire life. And so
Wow.
much of that is, yeah, totally. And
Great.
so much is, oh my God, totally. Flash, I love you, but we only have 14. All that, you know, Gordon's alive. I mean, literally, I could, at one point in my life, I could probably recite the entire script to you. But so much of that connection was through the music. And like you say, there was nothing like it where I think the only other film I had a similar relationship with was Blues Brothers. And that, in a kind of similar vein, was like, the music was songs. It was, you know, and it was music that brought you in. And like you say, nothing had been done like that before in terms
Not with a
of.
rock score. It became normal very soon after. A lot of the Japanese people took it up with some of the animated films, and then it became the norm to have like loud guitars in film scores. So I feel very kind of vindicated about that. And what you say is so right. I think the music can utterly change a film. And I noticed one of the reviews said about Daniel's music for this film, he said it elevates the film. And I think if you get it right, that's what happens. I always think of Gladiator. You know, I think Gladiator is a good film, good acting, you know, good writing, everything. But the music makes it into a masterpiece because you feel everything from a human point of view. I think that's Hans Zimmer's great triumph. And I've ventured to say, I think Daniel's done a really great job on this, just treading that line between humor and slightly kitsch and slightly over the top, but at the same time having this emotional content. So you get there and you kind of cry in some point. You know, people get quite emotional in the film, which I think is a great tribute to what Daniel's done.
All I want to do is make people cry. That's my big mission.
You made me cry.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I hope not. What was the, how did the ask come to you then? You know, and Daniel, how, at what point were you like, I have to ask Brian to be part of this?
Well, we kind of tried to track Brian down rather unsuccessfully a bunch of times. Actually, I think we started recording it, and I kept being like, has anyone got hold of Brian? And then someone said, Brian's in the building doing his new remaster of Queen 2. I texted the mastering engineer who I knew and be like, can you make sure Brian pops downstairs? And we just met at Abbey Road.
Oh,
And then, you know, I sent Brian some stuff. You know, I'd be very influenced by that style of writing, I think. And, you know, the way Brian works musically is, I think, very un not unusual, it's very unique. And that had a big influence on me on this score. And so it's weird to suddenly actually kind of manage to get to the source. And I think Brian could see that it wasn't just like, oh, I just want your name on this, or I just want you to do a guitar solo. It was like an artist first sort of decision. And Brian very kindly was quite enthusiastic about it.
Well, it wasn't hard. I mean, it's a gift for me, you know. I mean, Daniel, bless him, you know, is a now an internationally renowned film score writer, but he's written this in a style which I instantly relate to. So it was a gift to just go in there and play guitar lines, which were obviously kind of made in heaven for me to play. And we had a great time. We were in there together. I have to say also the director of the film came in with us
Travis.
that whole day. And that's a rarity. I've never really known that for a director and the composer to sit with me in the room the whole time and just create together. It was a real treasure of a day, the first day we pitched into this. And we did loads. We did lots of different cues at that time.
The first thing we were doing was Eternia, which is like the opening theme.
Oh, wow.
I originally was like, look, Brian, I just want you to do a guitar solo here, and here. And then Brian's first thing is, no, I want to do the melody, this thing at the beginning, which I got on all the synths, the kind of the,
Day,
if I can get piano sound.
day,
It's a gift.
And Ryan was like, "Oh, I want to do that." And I was like, "Oh no, no, I've got all these synths on it. I really want to keep that." And he did this thing, and it was a real amazing moment. And me and Travis just looked at each other while he was doing it, and we were both had these huge grins on our faces, and it was a really magic moment. It's really interesting when you can put even just a few seconds of something and it can completely transform a track. And that's one of the things I've found very interesting working with Brian, is you only need like 5 seconds and it can completely transform how a piece feels, how you feel about a piece.
That's great. For me, it was instant. I could hear it in my head immediately. First time you ever played those chords to me, I thought, yeah, that's where I need to be. I could hear it in my head and it came out great, I must say. I also persuaded Daniel to leave something off, which I'm very proud of. It's the very first thing you heard was going to be like synths and choir and everything. And then we happened to, by accident, I think, just hear it choir on its own. And I went, oh, you've got to start with just the choir because it's so ethereal. Mm-hmm. And it sets you up so expectantly. You know something cataclysmic is going to happen after that sort of gentle choir thing. So that's my proudest moment, Daniel.
Oh, really? That's it. I'm sure you've done better than that. But but that's the thing that's been interesting of us working together is the sort of collaborative aspect of Brian throwing things in. And I'm like, oh, I'm not sure about that. And then you're like, oh, actually, that's great. And then I'd probably do the same to Brian.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We were in the studio. Was it last night?
Yeah, it was yesterday.
It was last night. Yeah. We are, even though the film's out, we're still working on it with great
joy. Oh, hello.
Only because we want to, and we can. So we're doing a new version, which again kind of was in my head, kind of encapsulating the whole film. That's the idea, with lots more guitar work. We didn't have to do it, but it just seemed to be begging to be done. So last night, me having put loads of fragments together, Daniel comes in and goes, oh, you should do this. And I'm thinking, oh, yeah, no, I shouldn't do that. And I think, oh, yeah, no, he's probably right. And then we got Anne from the darkness in to play bass, and suddenly we're sort of in a world which is constantly evolving. I mean, all sorts of things may still happen before we finish this track, but it's just for the joy of doing it, really.
Oh, it must be lovely kind of to feel those kind of collaborations just not happen by accident, but, you know, sometimes you get put in a room with someone and it just clicks, and sometimes it doesn't. And so clearly there's a kind of... there's a similar passion for creating and music and telling stories through your music that you both have with each other. You don't always get that when you're put in a room with someone.
It's really true. I think collaborations are a big part of keeping me alive, you know, artistically alive. And I've done loads of them. Strange enough, I'm thinking of putting a collaborations album together of all the things that I've done over the years. But over the last like 50 years, I've probably done like 200 collaborations on records. And I think we might try and get the best of that and put it all out. I mean, all sorts of people, from Foo Fighters to Cliff Richard to God knows. You know, I've been lucky enough to have these people in the room, like you say, interact with them. And it's precious. Mm. It's something you couldn't buy.
And what was the appeal, Brian, of jumping in with this project and being part of Master of the Universe?
Just the whole thing. It was, I couldn't possibly say no to that. And I did... I had to clear the decks a bit because I was quite busy at the time. I just thought, no, I have to do this. There's a small window of opportunity here. It's made for me. I love what Daniel's done. I can't wait to interact. And then I saw some clips from the film and I thought, yeah, you know, this is, I suppose, in the same way that Flash Gordon was precious to me, this is now.
Daniel, how does it feel being in a room and hearing Brian May like just give it licks?
I think one of the amazing is you very rarely get to see the artistic process of someone else working, because it's such an intimate thing. You know, I work here in my flat, no one's around. The reason my flat is completely messy is because I can't work with someone else in the room, and I never know when it's going to be working. That sort of flow thing, I found it absolutely fascinating to see how Brian works, like watching how you play the guitar and how you track things. Like I was chatting with Sam, we've got this engineer called Sam, who I work with a lot. And on the way back, we're just saying, it's amazing. You've sort of, it's like decades of honing this sound and this technique, which you make look very effortless, but he will track things. He will play things differently each time. It's the first time you're like, oh, why has he done that slightly different? Why is that timing slightly off, or that? You know, and then you realize it's because when it all tracks together, it creates that amazing chorus and sound that is really special. And like, there's a lot of the sliding in, I found that's a whole new thing. And the also the bending, I'm a terrible guitar player. I'm watching Brian play is like, maybe you want to go back and learn the guitar better, because it's more like a voice, like the way you play, it's kind of like more glissando-y. And you normally go up and down like that on the string, but Brian goes in and out. Is that right? Or am I making that up? Like the way you kind of...
It's very kind of, of you to say so. Yeah, I do. My sort of dream is for my guitar to be the voice. I think that's the way I've always seen it. Yeah? You're very kind, Daniel. But I just do what I do. I'm not a virtuoso. I just do what I do, and I try to play how I feel. And I can't play faster than I feel. Well, I'm not one of these flash buggers who can zoom around. I just play what's kind of in my heart and my head, and I love it. I love playing, and I love being inspired by someone like Daniel and by the thing itself. Why? Because this was big with my kids. Of course, my kids were exactly the age. My son Jimmy had all the He-Man toys, and I still have them in a box. And I showed them to Daniel and his and Travis, and they were blown away. They went, I can't believe you had this stuff. But I love it. I still have loads of Star Wars stuff, which, again, I shared with my son, Jimmy, at the time.
I had a battle cat, yeah. I also loved
She-Ra. Battle cat, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you noticed, but my haircut's kind of slightly inspired by Adam. Anyway, But Daniel, in terms of, like, the kind of range of this film as well, I mean, there's so much music. It's such a brilliant kind of luxury as a fan to kind of just have so much music across the film. But there's some real light and shade in there as well, and a lot of fun, like you mentioned, like the Skeletor character and Jared's performance in particular, how much fun you can tell he's having with that character and the kind of real theatrics of it as well. It's really great to watch. At what point were you writing stuff and thinking about what it would be? Was it to performance? Was it to script? You know, what were you reacting to?
I mean, the first thing I actually wrote, I was still finishing Project Hail Mary, and I was a bit behind schedule on this film. With films, you often sign up for them like years ahead, some like big ones. They're like, we want you to do this film. And you're like, yeah, but that's not coming out for 2 years. And they're like, yeah, but we need to make a decision now.
We need it now.
And Travis was an absolute joy to work with. And he was very understanding, which was really good, because this score would have never sounded like it did without really his support. So he was like, no, I get it. I know you're going to pull it together at the right time. So I started like writing stuff on the piano in a way that I wouldn't normally. Some films I'd sort of work around noises or try and think about a sort of sound world. But with this, I was like, it needs to have solid themes. Because going back to, you know, earlier stuff like Flash and Highlander, these things, when you're writing from a sort of rock band perspective, you've got to have the themes that work, or the motifs and the ideas. A lot of modern film music can kind of get by making some weird noises and all this kind of stuff. But you actually need something solid. So I had all this stuff, and Travis just came in and I just played them on the piano. You know, I played this. I said, this is Eternia. I said, this is the Master's theme. Like, but I was like, it will sound way better not played with one finger on a piano. I went through the stuff like that. And I sort of, it was kind of interesting because those ideas all came together, and I wanted it to feel like rock opera is probably a good way of describing this score, of having some big themes that come back, big chord ideas, and everything needed to be sort of chunky in a way, like musically, like very robust, because that means when you're working with bands or guitars, it really cuts through, because sometimes I do a score and it is literally about like sound and texture, whereas this, it's got that, but it's really about being big.
Great drums in it as well, I've got to say.
Oh yeah, there's some great drums. We've got like we've got amazing drums. We've got Mike Smith and a guy called Freddie Sheed, and then we've also got Rufus Taylor,
amazing.
Roger Taylor's son, playing on the Darkness track, and also the thing we've just been working on. So there's a nice connection.
Indeed. What was the kind of, talk to me a little bit about the Darkness, because I almost feel like it's a type of film that's kind of got to have a song, but as part of it or attached to it, or I don't know whether that was a conversation that was happening at the start or if there was that idea.
Yeah, I wanted to do a song. It's incredibly hard to write a song with the title Masters of the Universe in. It's like the worst lyric to try and make rhyme. Like when I did this, there, I don't know if that's coming through, but that's basically Masters of the Universe. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how sometimes, like, I don't know if you ever do that, Brian, where you try and sing a lick when you're playing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so that was kind of like the starting point, and all the other chords in it are like the sort of power chords. And I'd watched this documentary on He-Man, Love Research, and Masters of the Universe was originally meant to be called Lords of Power, which I thought was a much better title. So I was like, we've got to get that in the lyrics. So put that in the lyrics, and then started working with the Darkness, Dan and Justin, and we started turning into song, and it was just, they were great. It was a great process. And I love the circulant aspect of that with Brian, and then the Darkness coming in to work on this thing we're doing now. So it feels like a big Masters of the Universe family.
Finding those kind of, like Brian was talking earlier about those moments that are emotional, you know what I mean? They really sort of pull on heartstrings. So finding those moments where it needs to kind of have that light and shade, is that hard when it is such a kind of, like you say, the kind of the rock opera nature of it, of kind of pulling it back and trying to find those kind of softer, quieter moments?
No, because there's emotional bits that make sense. But a big thing for me, also working with Brian, was trying to give him the biggest bits of real estate in a way, because when you get like what I call the classic Brian May sound, there's almost like a couple of Brian May sounds, but there's one that you hear right at the beginning of Eternia. It's such a, like, I have this whole thing about this process, which I've talked about before, but when we're working there, Brian's got his guitar, the Red Special, and I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, actually, this is crazy. This is an instrument of which there's only one in the world, forged in flame, kind of, like the Sword of Power, because it's made out of a fire part of it. One person wields the power, which is Brian, and it's created, and this sounds really pretentious, but it's really true, right? It's a sort of weapon that has put love and hope in the entire world, because he's done so much with that one guitar that has like transmitted out from wherever he's recorded it across the world, and it's made people feel great. So many people feel fantastic. Yeah, and I'd like, I think this might.
I'm just going to hire you as a publicist.
But I was like, I genuinely think this, Brian. I know if you think this.
I know you do. It's lovely that you say that.
I think it might be the most important individual instrument in the entire world, okay, of the modern world, because I cannot think of another instrument that is so connected with one person and that's had that impact. You know, you could have a Stradivarius violin, can be worth millions of pounds, but the man on the street would have no idea. You'd say, hear this version of Bach or hear this version. They wouldn't know the difference. There'll be a few people who do, but everyone, half the planet's probably heard Brian's guitar and it's deep in their soul, but it's also got such a recognizable sound, which is again, incredibly hard for an individual instrumentalist to have a sound that instantly connects to you. And so there's a thing called, I call it nostalgia, where there's a nostalgia element, which is like, you've got this thing in you and you mean something to you. And you can play a song you've heard before and you're like, oh, I feel good. But with this, we're trying to create something new, but also with this sound that is a core part of your memory system. So I found that when I was using the sort of distinctive Brian sound, I wanted to really hold off until these really key moments, because the power is bigger when it's not there all the time. So that
Brian,
was a big
basically
choice.
You are He-Man. You are our own very own He-Man, basically, Brian.
I am the Sword of Power.
Well, that's his credit on the film. It's Sword of Power guitar, because we called it the Sword of Power guitar. Because there's a couple of other guitarists on this, but you know, Brian's stuff is
Very good guitarist. I'm not the only guitarist on this, by the way. Some really good guitar playing by a couple of other guys.
Yeah, Tommy Emerton and Lee Abrahams both do stuff, but it's like the Brian stuff is so recognizable. It is like a strange weapon. It's a musical weapon. I can't use it all the time. I have to use it at the right moments.
There's another sound as well on the score that comes in that has got that similar thing of the hand claps, which has got a kind of a little nod as well to Queen, with the kind of We Will Rock You. Like you say, it's got that similar thing when you hear Brian and you hear his sound and you hear him play, it makes you smile from the inside out. And that's kind of got a similar thing as well. There's not many things do that.
Love you guys.
Well, that's one of the things about this film that I've loved the reaction to, right? Is I've seen so many messages about how happy it's made people feel. I had this whole thing about trying to make grown men feel like small children and small children feel like grown men and women, just, you know. But a lot of people have talked about how it's reignited their, like, it's taken them back to being a child in some ways. And not because the film's infantile, yeah, there's a slight element of that in the film, but I think it's because it's got a joy to it and it captures an emotion and an imagination that is, I think we sometimes lose as we get older, especially a lot of the films made these days. It's very hard to write music as emotive as this and as broad and big as this.
And fun.
Yeah, and it's just fun. I've listened to the tracks we've done over and over again. Like last night, Brian, I was listening to stuff we were doing. I was just like, this is great. That new part.
Are we getting a whole new album then from you guys? Is that the plan?
We don't know. We might get a new thing. We're still toying around, but I've heard it. It's fucking great. Whether anyone else gets to hear it, we'll find out.
Yeah, it's another dimension, isn't it? Which is great, yeah. And it's just because we love it, really. We didn't have to do this.
Have you enjoyed stepping back into the world of composing and film, Brian, you know, with this project?
Yes, I love it. I must say I love it. I would like to do more of it in my life, really. Of course, we were involved in Flash. We were involved in Highlander. And I did a film on my own, a sort of art film called Furia, which I'm pretty proud of, which was just me. I feel like I love to be triggered by these kind of stories that happen in films. And it allows you to escape from yourself. But of course, in escaping from yourself, you take certain parts of yourself with you. Does that sound pretentious? I remember seeing the rushes of the Highlander, and we saw the pictures where he's told he cannot. The hero says he's not allowed to fall in love because he's going to carry on, but the woman he falls in love with is going to grow old and die. So he's like, you must never fall in love. But of course, he does fall in love, and you see the sequence where she's young and pretty, and he's carrying her over the Scottish moors, you know about that. And then you sort of fade to a middle period, then you fade to the end where he's carrying her up the hill and she's passed away.
I can't even tell it without welling up. But
Oh.
I saw that and it immediately triggered this kind of feeling in me, like I wanted to write a song about it. But what was going on inside me was my dad was dying at the time, my marriage was breaking up, and various other things. And it all became channeled into that one kind of outpouring of stuff, which became Who Wants to Live Forever?
There's no time for us. There's no place for us. What is this thing that builds our dreams, yet slips away from us?
So that's the precious thing about a film. It can bring something from you out, which you didn't even perhaps know was in there in the same way. So I love it. I would love to be given more film scores, really, to be honest, if you're listening.
Well, they're doing a new Highlander. I didn't know if you knew
well,
that.
Well, we have been in conversation. I can't really say much about that, but definitely we know. Yes.
Amazing. I've kept you for long enough tonight. I know you've had a very busy day, both of you, and I really appreciate you taking the time and taking me into this beautiful collaboration. I hope it's the first of many. Huge congratulations. Thank you for your joy that you've brought us with this film and your collaboration on it. It's absolutely brilliant. It's great to chat to you. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you so much. God bless.
From the score to Masters of the Universe, that's Return to Eternia, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtracking with Daniel Pemberton and the one and only, the actual Brian May. My huge thanks to both of them for taking the time to talk to us, to Daniel for really setting up the whole conversation. I really appreciate it, mate. Masters of the Universe is on general release now and is a really great, fun watch for all the family. You can tell how much fun everybody's had in making it, and I think you really feel that when you're watching the film as well. If you want to hear my previous chats with lovely friend of the show, Daniel Pemberton, just head to edithbowman.com, where you can find every single episode of the podcast. We have a great search engine there where you can search by composer, director, film, actor, all that kind of stuff. And there's close to 600 episodes now. Follow us on your socials. We're at Soundtracking UK, and we also have a YouTube channel called Soundtracking Extra, which we'd be very grateful if you'd subscribe to. Next up then, I will bring you that chat with Phineas in the next couple of days. Before we also bring you Andrew Stanton, who is the writer and director, and the wonderful producer Lindsay Collins, talking Toy Story 5. But I have to say, these two are kind of Pixar legends, so we do talk about a lot of stuff. It's a really wonderful insight, particularly Andrew's kind of beautiful relationship, kind of full circle with Randy Newman. So Andrew Stanton and Lindsay Collins coming up talking Toy Story 5, as well as Phineas O'Connell talking The Beef 2, as well as Barbie and Bond. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.
We
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.